Discmax Project Docker 3073C3. Welcome to this talk. The hall is very big for the audience, but this is going to be fun. The first thing I want to ask you is, did anyone here ever use a disk mag? A couple hands raised. Cool. Happy to hear that. I'll talk about what these are, why these are interesting, and to give you a bit of an overview, here's a catalog to disk mags and a corpus of text, and why. I'll talk about that later. We'll start with a bit of time travel into the year 1986. In the librarian space in the US, there was an article in a review. Question was, is there a disc magazine in your future? David and Cynthia Bertuca. In a print essay, they presented a series of disc magazine. There was a new medium at the time that started its rise with computer culture, and there were quite a lot of disc mags. Because there were many of them, they presented four or five of them to spread knowledge about this new format. These disk mags you could read on your own computer. You could buy them or copy them. It could be opened on your own computer. There was no print equivalent. That was the special thing about these disk mags. You needed a device that could play them at your home. In the 80s, that meant in the 80s, computers spread farther and farther into living rooms and offices. And from a certain point, they were affordable to get. At the beginning of the 80s, they were very expensive devices, starting with the Apple II or so. Later on, something like a C64 could be bought for affordable money, which meant a big rise for the whole culture of home computing. A lot of the magazines from that time were in print format, like this thing. Maybe somebody knows this. The C64 magazine. Does somebody have one of these at home? Oh, fantastic. Very nice. You should definitely keep that. Never throw these away. I assume that these things by now have aged as well that you can actually call them cultural heritage for a time of the early digitization, 40 years or so. I think it's safe to say that it wasn't only print journalism, not only the glossy magazines, there were also disc mags. These disc mags were also available at street parlors, at kiosks, as presented in this Serials review that I showed earlier. This happened first in the US, but later also in Germany. These are two examples that I had the pleasure of buying myself. Is anybody here from Magic Disk? Nice. These are mostly game magazines. So on the discs in those magazines, there were articles about the games, tests of the games, and some user software. But that was an add-on, something like an address manager, but mostly people bought these for the game content. And at some point when this started having some commercial success, In the late 80s, after people learned to program things on their own computers, the demo scene started its rise. We had a very nice talk just a few minutes ago about demos on the Amiga. And from this point on, 1987 or so, there were also a bigger amount of community magazines that were getting programmed from home computer users for their own community. These were usually sent around with post for a small fee. So you would send a stamped envelope and get back a magazine. And these are a couple example magazines for the C64, I have to say. These were available for pretty much every platform at the time, not just the C64. You could get these magazines and files. This started with the Apple II that I already mentioned. There was also examples for the Spectrum, the BBC Micro, the Atari 8 and 16-bit for the Amiga, and the demo scene started communicating over this medium. There were demo parties, and with those floppy disks, these floppy disks always contained software, whether that was games or demos or user software. They always contained a mixture of interesting content, often from and by the community, and a bunch of software. To start with one example here, this is from the Magic Disk 64. I think this is from started in 1987. That was a mixed magazine. It contained a few articles on software and hardware, new things that had happened. BTX was current in 1984. Printers, games, if somebody is interested in that. There were a bunch of reviews of games about some things that are now considered classics. That just to present a few examples. Here's also a bit of news. This is a completely randomly selected example. These disk mags on occasion also contained reviews of and articles on CCC events and happenings. This Magic magazine was a magazine that you should have bought at street parlors. I think it also came with some copy protection at the point when the secondary readership became too big, which never really stopped anyone from copying this and passing it around in one's personal circle. And here I have a short movie to present what this might look like by Klaus Rettinghaus. So what do you need to show a disk magazine? You need a computer, of course. You need a floppy drive. This is the small version, not the 20 kilo thing, only 15 kilos or so. Each of those devices needs a power supply, of course, and the connecting cables. Klaus also found all the necessary cables for this. It's not too complicated, it just requires figuring out how to link these things up. But it's not a setup that everybody would just have at their home. And the current situation is that these disk mags were produced in a very big number. At first there were a small number of commercial magazines and then a lot of contributions from the demo scene, from home computer users, and that ended up being quite a huge amount, so that now there's a question of how do we actually handle this amount of data. We can reconstruct these things. The devices are mostly available. So a C64, this is a 5.25-inch disk. There were a variety of diskette formats. Most were on 5.25-inch discs. There were also 3.5-inch discs, and Amstrad Schneider had their own 3-inch format that was quite popular in Germany, but was very, very special. All right, now the setup is done. Klaus has pressed the load command, and now it takes a while. Now you can take breakfast. And this patience is something that you don't really have to bring today. And now it's starting.
It was quite common to have a small intro. Similar like to the demo scene, everything had an intro. And the magazines copied that kind of. And so you're wondering what's happening now, and you have to know to enter, to press the space bar. Otherwise, you pay $10 and, well. Okay, Klaus knew that. It's always space. Why? I don't know, because it might be because it's the biggest, and only the space works, usually.
Press space to continue.
It was always press space to continue. Well, it goes on like that, and I can tell a little more about it.
Was so mein Punkt ist dabei,
so
wir haben uns
jetzt im
letzten Jahr intensiver mit diesem Diskettenmagazin beschäftigt.
We spent more time on these disk drives and tried and the Macs, and we tried to figure out how many are there or were they, and see it as a form of of the cultural heritage of the born digital people. So without this setup, this material setup, this hardware setup, we cannot recover this. And this is part of it, that's not an error. So something happens with the graphics memory, and now it really starts. So we can now scroll through these menus, have a look what's available. And we can read it, and we can jump into the games menu, end of the games. So it was a mixture between reading material with added music, and some disc macs even had a different track for each of these parts. So it was quite a lot of work. And then you can jump into the software. So it's quite a special media. So thank you an Klaus.
Als kleine Zusammenfassung, das ist jetzt so ein Überblick, was Diskmax überhaupt sein könnten.
Also this is what Diskmax could be, and I see it as a historical artifact. It's a very early digital cultural heritage, and it was before the civil internet. And civic internet. So it was definitely before the triple W, and it was in the earlier home computer era. And back then, the cable connections weren't good enough, and they were transported, the data was transported using these floppy disks. And in their own aesthetics, they really are closely bundled to the computer technology of the time. So the C64 is closely connected to music, because that was one of the strengths of the device. And we can also understand this as a media phenomenon. And they are interactive, they are combining different media, they are hybrid. So when you buy that at a paper shop, at a local kiosk, then there's a whole another layer that the buyers usually cherished. And of course, there is a lot of input by the community, so it's a media that the community embraced. So what do I want to do? What do I want to achieve? Similar to maybe the demo scene that already reached UNESCO status, which I appreciate, so I want to also enable the disk mags to be conserved. And we can do that in the historical setup, but they can also be emulated. If I now jump into the emulator, then I have this magazine, and I can jump into the news. So that's another option. What I lose, of course, is the whole look and feel of the setup. Even if the emulators, they do try a lot to have a similar setup, it is different. So an emulator, you can speed up, you can easily restart. So it's a completely different impression of the media. If you program something on here, so if the original has an error and it crashes, then you have a problem. You have to start from scratch. But in an emulator, you can have a lot of save files. So it's different. But at least you have access to all the content. You even have access to the content if you don't have an original setup. What we can also try is to just take the content and save and transfer, transfer all the content from the original containers and maybe analyze it closely and scientifically, and maybe we check the content. How is the quality? What's the quality like? So not how well is it, but are there maybe names from other software or groups of home computing that I can maybe want to put in a database or something? And that's one of the goals of a scientific critic analysis. At the University of Würzburg, we have a small lab where we collect old devices, and that enables us to bring people into contact with old technology and also show these old Macs in the original context. And this, the digital talk, it's on the table over there, on here, and that's, I think, December 2022. So there are disk mags that, even though the technology has changed a lot in the last 40 years, but still there are communities that still publish these disk mags with floppy disk, and of course you need a setup for that. Emulation already showed it briefly, and this now with a re-digitization workflow. Why re-digitization? It is already digital, but still the distance is so big that I have to kind of re-digitize or re-medialize it. So I have to take this original text and modify it in multiple steps before I can show it or present it in, for example, an HTML page. So this is a way to make it accessible to a bigger public. So a bigger public than, for example, with an emulator, because you need some special knowledge, not much, but a little. Or an original setup, it's even more limited. We just cannot assume that people have that. So this is another nice thing. How do you get from the floppy disk, or the bits and bytes that are on a floppy disk, to the final result? I thought I try to reconstruct that briefly. So, for example, on the disk, you find a byte that says I'm a zero. I represent a zero. Then you can think, well, if you know it's text, then okay, let's look into ASCII. No, zero is not a thing. Then you look Petsky, that's a Commodore, or Commodore pendant to ASCII. It's not exactly the same, but it's similar, or it's connected, and also doesn't know what a zero is supposed to be. So I'm not immediately finding an encoding format that can handle this zero. Then there's the so-called screen code, and the screen code says what's written in the screen memory. So at each address, and I can maybe show that briefly. So each block at the screen, and we have a 45 by 40 screen, and I can show something. And if I want a zero on the left top, then that would be 1024 zero, and then there's the at symbol at that position. So the screen code tells me zero means at. The screen says, well, and I'm taking an example from this floppy disk magazine. Oh no, I already closed it. So the screen might be, instead of an at symbol, maybe a the German U with two dots, which would be an Ü. And now there's a typical thing for the representation of non-standard symbols, everything that exceeds ASCII or Petsky. You had to work on that yourself, and so you, for your own disk, floppy disk drive, you could make adjustments. So it's not a standard anymore, and the companies wanted it that way. So you could modify it and could set up your text yourself, and that way we will create forms of the layout, and so this would be a headline, and if there are spaces in between, that would mean it's not just spaces, but multiple spaces are a blocking, for example, and things like that can be described. And that's close to the ASCII-based layout. It shouldn't be too special for people here, but compared to how we would encode text today, it's quite different. So born digital text today would look quite different, or does usually look quite different, to a born digital text from the 80s. So it can be worth it to differentiate in the encoding. And if you want to check out the result, I also created a small demo edition where we have the content of such a disk mag in form of HTML. I'm just scrolling through a bit. There are a few great games, some reviews. Pirates, yeah, it's amazing. And some instructions for creating your own joystick or something, or extending your hardware. Amazing things. This Mac really was something because of these. So yeah, if you this is a complete remedialization, and if we use that as access, and if you want to do it scientifically, you always have to have the original next to it to compare. But that's one thing that's great is you have a search function, which in the original, of course, you don't have. What would we have to do now? You see, I have 10 slides left and not 10 minutes.
Was wir jetzt gemacht haben im letzten Jahr oder in diesem Jahr 2023.
What we have done now in the year 2023 is we reconstructed part of these disc magazines, and I will now soon say how many we have found. So the first thing we want to do is we want to make catalogs of it and extract texts with the added complexity that sometimes we have to replace something that might be an U-Umlaut and is not encoded in the original.
Sehr aktiv, die haben teilweise eben auch eigene Diskettenmagazine gehabt.
So Demoscene was very active in this and they distributed a lot of disc mags. Those are the sources that we used.
Spezielleren Fanseiten, also sowas wie Coldplay oder Z-Express, noch weitere sehr interessante Fundstücke. Man muss sagen, die oberen vier Abteilungen oder oberen drei zumindest, das, die sind sehr stark auf die westliche Hemisphäre
begrenzt, während Z-Express very much focused on the gaming scene.
Das zeige ich gleich nochmal in der Grafik.
Enough, and I'll show this in a graphic real quick. Let me just get this graphic. This shows over the duration of those decades. I don't think you can see the numbers. Way to the left is 1980. And then you see these are the first disc mags on the Apple II. And then at some point you see a very extreme peak of the
C64.
That's mostly the output from the demo scene. And then there were more modern systems. The purple curve here is the Amiga, and then about at the same time, there's also the 16-bit Atari. I think it's mostly the ST, but maybe something else. And then there's the yellow curve with the two peaks. Those are the MS-DOS-based disc mags that are showing up. And towards the end, there's this reddish-brown curve. This is the way older ZX Spectrum that was available on the other side of the Iron Curtain in the post-Soviet countries, available in the 90s or was bought or reproduced there around that time. And there was a shifted reception of this device. And here you see on these small hills at the right side that there's still a bit of activity still happening. These are not absolute numbers of issues. These are actual numbers of new magazine issues in that year. That also needs to be kept in mind. We know that there were about 2,500 magazines. We estimated about 250, so we were slightly off there, from 250 to 2,500.
And
I tasked four students with this that I still have to mention somewhere. I have to check whether it's still on the slides. They spent a lot of time on web scraping, on OpenRefine, and put that all in a semantic media wiki. Why did we do that? Because we wanted to get the disc mag scene and maybe earlier creators of disc mags. We want to put them into the position to maintain their content. So we have those contents that we received from many other sources, like the Commodore Scene database. For pretty much every system, there are more resources that you first have to research and figure out where they are, and then convert them. Let me skip over that slide for a second. So we took all of these extra sources and put all of that into one single catalog that you can use. It's available under ssdiscmags.de. Let's jump to that for the last 2 minutes.
What you can do with that is you can go through it in alphabetical order. Of course, for this, you really have to know what you're looking for, unless you want to really just enjoy the titles. You can have an overview of the different systems that are represented here. The Commodore is really one of the top ones, but MS-DOS and Spectrum are also up towards the top. What's also interesting here, the language and the origin country, some of these magazines have been created in different languages for different countries. So I'm jumping to the language part now. For a lot of disk mags, we don't know yet which language they're in actually. But out of those 2,500, we cannot currently look into all of them right now. So we only looked into a selection of this. We started focusing on the German magazines. Those were still 87. And for those, at least we could say we understand the language and we can process this. What I also want to show you, we have a little gallery of these, of how this works.
Yeah, and this was one of the very first ones on floppy disk. Before that, there were some digital magazines we couldn't call disk magazines because they were tape magazines on magnetic tape. And then we have even older ones. For the very interesting Amstrad Snyder, there was a magazine for the Amiga, and that had a very nice menu. And there's one for the Atari, it's a fanzine for the Star Trek, with a fascinating menu. You have to walk to a certain station to get the article to read. And this is a very interesting. It's Sex and Crime from the group Amok. It's just one file. So it could be distributed with other disk mags. So it was a disk mag that was distributed with by other disk mags. Very interesting. And other colorful things. So this magazine from Ukraine, and in Russian, of course, for the Spectrum from 1997 to 2001. And the student who evaluated this also is from the area. And then, of course, the digital talk that until today exists.
Okay, I can see that I don't have much time left now. I hope what I could show you now, there were different generations of disk mags, parts of which were really highly impacted by the demo scene. Disk mags were also an international phenomenon. Where there were home computers, there were also disk mags, or where they are home computers, where they are still existing, the disk mags exist. What can also be said, some of those were also just one-volume projects, so sometimes those were special editions, but also you have some of those disk mags that existed for several years. So for most disk mags, you had about 10 editions, and some of those were distributed over 30 years. Now lastly, I want to talk about the text extraction. So about the catalog I showed you, our goal is to add additional context to it. We have lawyers working on this because we have the question of copyright and personal rights. And how do we deal with this? Because sometimes some private or even illegal information is mentioned in there. So we want to figure out from a scientific perspective, how can we work with this? So we don't have default texts. You can make statistics with it, or you can find certain words, keywords, and where these keywords have been mentioned, in which magazines, and where you can find them.
Yeah, so that's it. I hope I could give you a brief overview, and I am here for questions. Thanks very much. And there is an option to ask questions. Just approach the microphones or via the internet using the hashtag. Microphone 1. Thanks for the talk. A question about the topic you just teased quickly, and that's the judicial part, because we have text and software. So if you're redistributing this, how is it? Well, what we're doing, at the moment with our catalog is we give credit and we link to the disk images, but we're not creating a new collection. We say the source of the disk images is still with the original sources. I can open it quickly. So if DemoZoo or Poet, if those magazines offer images, then we say, yeah, great, we are linking to that. So for the text extraction, we are also using them, but we are not really hosting them ourselves. We just extract just the stuff we are extracting, we host, and we hope that we are that way not getting into any trouble. But we'll have to see. I hope that answers the question. Question almost, because the problem is just shifted, because someone is hosting it and someone is making a copy and distributing it. So I think with literature, with text, it's slightly different. I'm not a lawyer. But how if you want to archive it for a long time and make it accessible? Can we maybe make it for the greater good or for the greater common? Or is it still technically not allowed to distribute it, to copy it? Because we need the rights from the original copyright holders. Answer, well, what I can say, that we are in contact with the original creators, and if they say, yeah, you can have it, or you can make it accessible in that and that form, or that way, then it's ideal. And all the other things, there's kind of a gray area where we'll have to see how much is already what kind of public is already created by the original publication, so that we can argue that there is interest to keep it in a newspaper archive, for example. And then there is another question, how do you organize access? If we say we collect it, but it's just limited access, then it's a completely different thing than if I would say everyone can access it. So if I somehow organize access, then this is possibly a way better situation. And we have a question from the internet. Oh, we don't? Then, okay, microphone 1 again. Okay, thanks for the project, first of all. What weird to me is you're taking out the text and the images or the pictures, but the original disk max you're not hosting. You don't have them. You were talking about the Internet Archive. Oh, and there the emulator is in the browser, so you can press play and then it's shown. So a lot of things are lost. So the music, the menus, but that's not what you are archiving. So if Kultboy, for example, kultboy.de gets lost, then everything is lost, no? Answer? Well, we try to use the Internet Archive to host things. So we know that there was something. So this website you mentioned, there are a lot of sources, and of course we do a snapshot in the Wayback Machine, so we have that to even have proof or information that there was a Mac. And to make an archive from the images is a different thing, because so as scientists we can say, well, we are collecting and we are not making it accessible, but we are doing research. That's one thing, and that allows us to at least work with this and then make the results accessible. Of course, that's not really satisfying, so I really hope that maybe at some point we find a solution or an option to be able to host it ourselves and to offer access to it. So maybe you can download the whole catalog, or maybe to get the images via the internet. So here I can maybe show a small example. It's a soft disk magazine here, and usually you can not only download or access the emulated original or download the emulated original, but here in the list you also have the disk images. So this is a bit longer lasting, and it also works quite well in the browser. So if we now transfer, or we can jump from our catalog into this emulation, which would be a logical next step, then we could also use the magazines in the catalog. But this hint was important, that of course with emulation we lose a lot. So that's also why we have our retro lab. Let's jump back. So we are setting that up step by step, and we want to use that because it allows people to bring people into contact with that form of digitization. Yeah, thank you for that time travel. Unfortunately, we don't have any more time, so thank you and a round of applause. And also thank you for your attention.